From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's Friday, and we begin, as always, by talking about news from around Illinois. Today, we're focusing on just two breaking news stories from this week, and we begin with a tragedy in Chatham, Illinois, just outside Springfield. That is where a vehicle drove through an after-school facility. Four young people were killed, ranging in age from 7 to 18. Six others were injured. Joining us now to talk more about this is Cole Hanke, Capital Bureau Chief for WCIA-TV. Cole, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Thank you for having me on, Brian.
Tell us in more detail what exactly happened here.
So this facility, the Why Not After School program, is one of several after school facilities in Chatham, but it definitely had a lot of children. It's a very big building right on Walnut, which in Chatham is a very popular road. It basically drives right through the middle of the village all the way down across laterally. And this car had driven off of the road. Illinois State Police said yesterday, 1,300 feet, essentially, from the building, drove almost in a complete straight line across a cornfield, over a road, through a parking lot, and then through this after-school building that was currently, it was 3:20 p.m. on a Monday afternoon. Kids were just getting, were there for that program. That's the plan, that they would be there. Car drives all the way through, comes out the other end before getting stopped by a fence at a nearby field. And four girls died as a result of the crash. Six were hospitalized immediately after. So far, we've learned, we've gotten it confirmed from Illinois State Police. Two of those six have been released from the hospital. Chatham Police posted a video last night, one actually, coming home, which was a cool video to see. But it's really just been a tragedy for the Chatham community. As I know I put it into words there, but it's really inexplicable for something like this to happen to in such a terrible degree.
And people were immediately reaching for explanations. And, you know, you think of past, there have been recent incidents in mostly in other countries of people with ill intent driving through crowds. I guess this even happened here in America around the Super Bowl in New Orleans. But it turns out that the police, at least eventually within a day or so, said that wasn't the case here. Say more about what we understand about what caused this.
So, yes, the Illinois State Police came out pretty much the next morning and said this was not believed to be intentional. They got out way really far in front of that. But then for a couple days, we didn't really hear much from Illinois State Police until yesterday when they came out. Like you said, there was rampant speculation about this. There were all sorts of different theories going around on social media as to what might have happened, but Illinois State Police confirmed yesterday that the driver of the vehicle, immediately after being found at the scene, cooperated, went to the hospital, and provided blood and urine samples that showed that she had no signs of any sort of alcohol or other controlled substances in her system at the time of the crash. Then Illinois State Police say yesterday as well that there has been some evidence put forward that may point to a medical emergency taking place and causing this crash. So if she were to have had some sort of medical emergency while behind the wheel, it could lend credence to the idea of how she was able to drive completely through a field and really have no signs of trying to stop through this entire way. And some of the other outlets here in Central Illinois, specifically, I believe News Channel 20 had an interview last night with a lawyer for Marianne Akers last night that did say she has proof that Marianne Akers, I'm sorry, is the driver in this case. She says she has proof that that she suffered a seizure behind the wheel. So it's been a roller coaster of a week in terms of that as well, of just what the possible explanation of this could be. The Illinois State Police investigation is still ongoing. They're by no means saying this is wrapped up, and they're continuing to look at any possible angle they can.
And I guess we should say, maybe it's too early, and I don't want to get into speculation, but I don't know if you've considered or talked with people about possibilities. I guess even if it is a medical episode like that, there can still be legal liability for people in terms of causing these sorts of tragedies?
Yeah, and that's a question, and that's really an important piece of this that I think everybody's really learning about in this system, is that charges do not come until the investigation is completed and handed over to the state's attorney. So the Illinois State Police still have this investigation, and they said yesterday, once they are done, and they are trying to work as quickly as possible, but once they are done, we'll hand over their findings to the Sangamon County State's attorney, who will determine, and this is how Director of the Illinois State Police, Brandon Kelly, worded it. He said the state attorney will decide if charges, if any, would apply under the law here. So there's a lot of potential questions around this. I don't think it's as simple as just there's a lot of different charges that could potentially apply to this, depending on what's founded about the medical questions at hand here. I don't have a law degree,
we don't want to speculate either. And, maybe it could be one of those. It does seem to just be a terrible tragedy, and people are grasping for just to understand why. And sometimes there's not an answer to that, I guess. Yeah.
I think in the scramble to understand why, there was a not a desire by any means, but a search for, somebody to point the finger at. And obviously, in this case, there was the driver, but the idea of fault is a completely different question. Yeah.
No, that's an excellent point. Well, let's put the focus back on the victims here. What do we know about the people who were killed and injured?
Yes. So the four that were killed were 2 7-year-olds, 1 8-year-old, and then an 18-year-old who was just getting ready to graduate from Glenwood High School. And the community really has rallied around to these girls that they really just, it's rocked the community. There's no other way to describe it. These were kids of all ages, one with all of them bright futures ahead of them, one getting ready to head out to college and graduate high school just this month now. And it's, we've heard from families talking about what kind of people they were and how they were all just, very bright-eyed, very spontaneous, just fun-loving people that were going to a daycare in some cases working at that daycare.
Yeah, the 18-year-old I understand was working.
Yeah,
maybe you can talk also about, I understand there was a big fundraiser, a lot of businesses have tried to step forward and sort of rally.
Yeah, so that's been something that's been honestly really just impressive to see. There's not a person in that community that isn't devastated by this, but they're all rallying together to just make sure nobody's alone in this process. The next day, we saw businesses opening their doors just for people to come together and grieve. There was an ice cream shop, Scoop du Jour, which offered free pizza and ice cream to anybody that showed up. And you had hundreds of people come through there that morning of all ages, parents coming by, who were just trying to come to terms with it. Parents who had kids in the building at the time of the crash were there. And you could just kind of see it on their face that they're trying. They know nothing's normal about this, but they're just trying to work forward through the entire thing. And we've also had vigils that were held by the town and the high school student council put one together at the football field the other night, which was really, really unbelievable to see the crowd that came out and what the students were able to put together in that regard as well.
Cole Hanke is the Capitol Bureau Chief for WCIA-TV in Central Illinois. Cole, thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian.
We're going to continue our reporter roundtable now with Ryan Denham, who is the digital content director for WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media. And he is joining us to talk about a shooting that took place on the Illinois State University campus this past week. Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
Tell us a little bit more about what happened.
Sure. So on Sunday evening, everybody affiliated with ISU, students, faculty, and staff, got an alert that there had been shots fired at the Bones Student Center, which is like the kind of the hub of campus, the big student center. It turned out that what had happened was an isolated incident, a fight that broke out outside of a sorority event that was taking place inside of the Bowdoin Student Center's ballroom. And during this fight, somebody had a gun and shot another person and then fled the scene. And so, you know, it obviously was a very volatile moment and situation for the campus community. And as of now, as where things sit as of Friday, is that the shooter appears to still be at large. There have been no arrests in the case. The victim was not seriously injured, is expected to survive the injuries, but it certainly rattled campus.
What did I know you and your colleagues talked to students who witnessed the event. What did they have to say?
Yeah, students are interesting. I mean, they're not a monolith, certainly. They reacted to it in many different ways. Some were very rattled by it and left uneasy the whole week. Some wanted the university to cancel classes on Monday, which it did not. Others tried to move on and tried to continue with their regular duties. There were events on the quad on Monday. Students tried to go about their regular life. I think what's interesting about it is that this is not, for a lot of these people, this is not the first rodeo, not the first time they've had an incident where gun violence has touched them personally. And so maybe there's a desensitization to it or getting accustomed to it that is pretty unfortunate.
So this is the second shooting incident on or near, at least that I can recall off the top of my head, on or near campus. And both of them involve non-students, and correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, please. But I wonder if there's something systemic the university is looking at needing to address here.
I'm not sure about that. I think, you know, I've talked to some students who did see a bit of a pattern here. So this is, you know, an event that brought people who were not students to campus in both cases. And then those off-campus folks caused trouble. And so there, you know, there was, if you consider that a pattern, then that's a pattern. You know, I don't know how a university restricts visitors from off-campus, you know, in that way. That seems like a difficult thing to even try to do if you'd even want to.
Well, at least on an open campus,
that's urban, open campus.
Observing
that pattern.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. I guess you could have, if you could imagine like a closed campus with a gate or something, but for people who maybe aren't familiar, Illinois State University, like the U of I in Urbana, like a lot of other schools, is pretty integrated with the city around it, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So in the aftermath, how have students been, you know, you mentioned that there was this sort of range of opinion. Do people generally feel safe there? Does this seem like, well, this, if as long as I don't go to these, you know, on-campus parties or something, I'm probably safer? How are people thinking about this?
Well, I think that the opinion there would certainly run the gamut too of feeling very safe to not feeling safe at all. I mean, objectively, this is a very safe community, the town of Normal. I mean, our rate of gun violence incidents is lower than places like Peoria or Champaign-Urbana. Still, though, I mean, these incidents, you know, if you just use the numbers in the data, yeah, it's a small number, but each one carries with it a particular brand of trauma. Just one example, I talked to a parent, an ISU parent, the day after it happened. She lives in town here, but she has kids who go to ISU. And her other kids went to a high school in Normal community, that had a school shooter incident back in 2012. So this is like literally not the first time that she's gotten a call from her kids or an alert that says, hey, your kid might get shot. You know, so I think that this repeat of trauma that we're allowing ourselves to live with related to gun violence is pretty remarkable here. That's what we're feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. One other thing jumped out at me in one of the stories that you and your colleagues did on this, and that is a concern among some students who are Black that they might potentially get profiled, or their peers may get profiled as the suspect, I should say. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, I thought there were very, very interesting comments. You know, in both cases that we've had these shootings the last 7 months, you could make the argument that a lot of the people in the crowd when it happened were people of color, right? And you can easily misconstrue that as some sort of pattern or trend and assign blame to the wrong people there. The sorority event that this happened outside of it was a sorority that is part of the Divine Nine Coalition, so a historic African-American sorority that this happens. And I think some of the students I talked to said they were concerned that they're going to pay the price and face the blowback for something that ultimately is not their fault. And that even some of the male Black students on campus might be profiled as a result of it. And that's something they're very concerned about.
It's interesting because I can remember this same sort of conversation happening, gosh, 25 years ago on the U of I campus. And there's historic reasons that some of these events happen in student centers because African-American sororities often don't have the resources of some of the, you know, traditionally white fraternities and sororities that have houses off campus. But maybe that's more than we have time to get into today. Ryan, what's next? Is it just, you know, unless there's a suspect, things sort of, and I should say we only have about 30 seconds left, but things are just sort of up in the air at this point.
Exactly. Yeah. We're, you know, they've released images of a person of interest in the case. So presumably by now they probably know I would guess they would know the person's name, and they're just kind of looking for that person to see if they were in fact the shooter.
Ryan Denham, Digital Content Director at WGLT Bloomington Normals Public Media. Thank you for sharing your and your colleagues' reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Okay, thanks, Brian.
Coming up after the break, we are going to continue our week in review portion of the program. We'll be talking with Linda Kenyon, our Washington correspondent, and Hannah Meisel of Capital News Illinois about the news that happened this week in Illinois state government and politics. Then singer-songwriter Tommy Prine. This is the 21st Show.